and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us for tonight's Comic Book Club. And now, here are your hosts, Pete LePage, Justin Tyler, and Alex Albert.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our man by the bar, Barman.
Awesome, there he is.
Thank you so much for coming out to our pre-New York Comic Con show.
Yeah, excited for New York Comic Con.
Very exciting. Now, Pete's a little nervous tonight. This is a big night for him, right?
Yeah, it is a big night, yeah.
Oh, really? Why?
I asked you to be cool. I asked you to be cool.
We're the opposite of cool on the show.
Yeah, I guess so.
What's the big news, Pete? Are you falling in love?
No. No, I'm falling out of love, but thanks for bringing that up.
Whoa!
This got real raw, real weird, real quick. You guys wanted me to talk about the Queens County Farm Museum, right?
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, I wanted you to.
I said,
Alex, when we get up there, say the most exciting thing that's happened to you in the last year.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what
you came up
with.
I went to the Queens County Farm Museum this weekend for the Apple Festival, which is really exciting.
I love apples!
Don't go to the Apple
Festival. I love farms and museums. The fact that there's some sort of cross of those two
things. Yeah, it's actually a fun place. But the Apple Festival, there were 3 bins of apples.
What?
There are more apples in my supermarket. This is about comic books, right?
Yeah.
Are you doing your tight five on Farm
it's
Museum?
It's a very loose five.
Yeah. I love it.
So
they did actually give out Green Lantern comic books at the Farm Museum Apple Festival.
Was that specifically designed for you being there as a celebrity guest?
I brought a Green Lantern comic.
Yeah, yeah.
That was it.
So you gave it to a sad kid.
Yeah. What's going on with you, Justin? We've talked about me and Pete.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad we got into Pete there earlier. Let's see. Not much. I've been sick for like 2 months. You guys have this cold, right?
Yeah. What's that?
Thanks, guys. Yeah. It's all right. I'm probably over it. This ought to do the trick.
Yeah, a little alcohol will kill it.
What is this, Hawaiian beer? Perfect.
Yeah. It's got extra pineapple and ham in it.
Yep. You get that culture.
Yes, I do. Guys!
Yeah, I think we nailed this opening bit. We nailed it.
This is, in 5.5 years of doing the show, I want to say this is the best opening bit we've ever done.
Yep.
I'm pretty excited about it. But I'm actually more excited about the guests that we have tonight. One is the writer of Fables. The other is the writer of the upcoming Thunderbolts. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Willingham and Daniel Way!
Yeah!
Mate, please, come on up, guys. Come on up. Come on down.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Come on up.
Welcome.
Grab a seat.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. Guys, thank you so much for coming to the show. It is a pleasure to have you here. Bill, it's a pleasure
thank
to have you back.
I
think it's on. Is it on?
Pleasure being had.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
You've been had.
Yes. You were first on our show, I think, probably the first year of the show or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Really?
Yeah.
I think so.
If I'd have known that you guys were just starting out, I wouldn't have done your show.
Yeah.
I wanted you guys to be seasoned professionals.
We actually were much more professional.
Yeah. Well, good.
You're going to have to come back in 5 more years, I think, at that point. Bill, you have a ton of stuff going on right now, a lot of titles. I mean, this is a very general question, but what is it like to see Fables grow so much over the past 10 years?
Mostly, I don't trust it. I'm used to putting out books that get a little bit of critical attention and sell in the high dozens. So to have
that's our best selling book these days, isn't it?
Maybe, yeah.
That's awesome. Congrats.
But I'm still hoping that Fables finds an audience someday. I do not trust success at all.
Yeah.
So that's what it's like.
One thing we were talking about
sounds terrifying.
We were talking about, I'm forgetting the issue number, but the most recent one that came out, the end of the Toyland arc. And I think the thing that we were talking about there was it almost feels like you've gotten to this other level with the comic where you can now start creating your own fairy tales in a way. Is that in any way correct? Or?
Sure. Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Nailed
nice.
It.
Yeah. Got it.
We did it.
Great. Thanks, Bill.
Creating our own stories is why, like, 3 out of 10 writers get into the comics business.
Yeah?
The rest, they're just for, the chicks and the fame.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
True story.
How's that working out for you guys?
I'm there for the creative side.
Yeah.
Daniel?
Chicks and money all the way. All the way to the bank.
Woo! Awesome.
What's a chick?
Nice.
The other big thing that you have coming up is the Fabletown and Beyond convention. What's that all about, and what's that like to have your own convention at this point?
Well, it's I don't know what it's like other than being willing to run a convention. We've started in on it just enough to where I realized that that's just an insane thing. People that host conventions are suicidal, I think, and because it's just a lot of work, and a lot of having no idea if anyone's going to show up, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not my own convention. It's about lately with Fables is kind of a high profile member of it, but there's a movement in comics that I think is very strong now. I think it's in all of entertainment that Kurt Busiek has dubbed mythic fiction, for lack of a better term, and it's a pretty good term. But it's like the non superheroic action adventure hero mythology folklore corner of the market.
You need a cool acronym for that, because that's a long title.
A cool, yes, yeah. Well, mythic fiction actually breaks down to mighty yeasty Titanic.
Oh boy, wait. Anyway. Were you saying break down every letter of mythic fiction?
Huh? No, I was saying an acronym for the long. Very long term.
You made it longer.
Oh. I had acronyms. Well, I lost them actually in a cab with my wallet earlier. But
lucky case, cab driver.
Yeah. All my cab drivers are lucky. I don't know what that means, but I feel dirty having said that.
All your cab drivers get lucky.
In any case, the convention is about all of those kinds of books, and we're having a pretty wide-ranging guest list to celebrate that corner of the marketplace, which I think is possibly the strongest single movement in comics since the one that made superheroes dominate for the last 50 years.
Wow.
I'm still going to write superheroes. As a matter of fact, I just finished a new project that I'm still going to do that. Still love superheroes and stuff. But we're going to try and pump up this little corner as well.
I like that, and I think it's really smart to brand it mythic fiction, because fantasy already has such a... People have a preconception about what that is. There's swords. There's going to be an amulet and a lot of boobs. And yeah, which you can have all that stuff.
So you
but
have
it's
no
not
boobs? No boobs? Is that what you're saying?
No amulets in our boobs.
Yeah. I should have been clear.
Yeah. No one likes an amulet near a boob.
This is probably a good time to introduce my new charity, which is the Amulet Free Boob Foundation. We're raising money.
Are you bringing amulets to boobs, to unadorned breasts, or?
I think we've kept about as abreast of this conversation as we can. I will not milk that for any more, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm
going to
let
on.
You continue.
Right. Yeah, didn't leave the puns in the cab, clearly.
Yeah. I think Fabletown and Beyond is interesting, and I know you can't really speak to other conventions, but you have things like this, Morrison Con, Image Con popping up. Why do you think all these boutique cons are starting up right now? Why do you think this movement's happening?
Because as an industry, we've been so successful that our cons are must-attend things for the entire entertainment industry, which is wonderful. I love no longer being in the back of the bus. But now the bus has gotten huge. And
we got kicked off the bus.
We kind of did.
Because you're in a separate bus.
It really is. I want to talk about comics to people that want to hear about comics and have that conversation. At San Diego, for example, you don't have programming about comics as in the state of the art much anymore. You have big shows for big TV and movie releases, and that's important. God bless them. You have big panels about, this company and our laundry list of books, and this other company and our laundry list of books. And so those panels are not even a press release. There's so many books you have to get out in the little time allocated for comics that it's just a listing of your table of contents. It's just it's almost not there. We used to talk about comics at comic conventions. You notice that the...
we're getting kicked out of here, too.
Yeah.
So yeah, this start show, talking
it's
about
John Lennon's birthday, so he's playing.
Yeah. But, anyway, they got... It's. I think these shows about comics are just a natural response to the fact that we're doing so well. And plus, these shows about comics, like Emerald City, for example, they're having to upgrade their facilities every year because people are attending those in masses too. It's the time for comics, so why not?
Awesome.
Daniel, are you going to start up WayCon?
No. I actually own, I'm part owner of a convention up in Michigan. It's a small thing. I had the same feeling. It's called Cherry Capital Cons in Traverse City, Michigan. But I wanted to do a show that focused on comics, on the medium of comics, not just one kind. And just to keep the focus there. And we've had great guests. Steve Dillon was there. Jason Aaron was there. I don't know. Who was there last year, Kimmy? Stegman was there. Right. Stegman's there like every year. Scotty Young.
Ryan Stegman's actually there right now.
Yeah, exactly. When does this thing
get going?
Yes, I told
him it was this weekend. Yeah. And yeah.
So you guys are a couple of conventioneers.
Well, it was. I think you and I are in the same boat. Is that we end up in? You know, we get invited to a lot of conventions. You go to the ones you can, but you've got a steerage ticket, you know, and even at the big ones and even at the big panels, I've been at, you know, Marvel X-Men panels when I know for a fact that 2/3 of the audience is there to hold their seat for the Twilight panel or whatever.
Yeah, that's definitely
right.
A bummer.
And
we did a panel once and it was all...
For the most part, you're preaching to the converted.
It was all Buffy people waiting to do the Buffy sing-along. Yeah. So they definitely were...
Yeah, they were very excited about our comic book panel.
Yeah.
They actually were into it. They were very nice.
We connected with them.
Yeah, we made fun of them a lot.
And we started singing.
Yeah, I don't blame the audience for doing that. The way
it's
it
not
was structured,
fault.
You had to have a chance to see what it is you wanted to see. But it was just it's just an awful way to you know, run a hospital. It's just...
what? That's the biggest problem.
It's just,
all
it's
the
just
patients.
Terrible. And... And some of the excuses, we've gotten so big we can't, you know, we had the thing with the Fables panel where half the audience was camping there for the next panel afterwards. We were going to turn away half of our audience because there just weren't the chairs available. I found out about it in 30 minutes in advance, so I came up with like six different plans to move the people up. That, you know, I guarantee they get their seats back in before we let others in. You know, we'll have our DC people come up and move the crowds. And these security says, that's not a procedure. That's not a procedure. That's not a procedure. And they were just unwilling to try and fix the problem when it could be. Because their whole attention is move meat through the machine efficiently.
It's not we're all meat. Show. Is what it comes down to.
When you guys started out writing and you're like, I want to write comics, did you ever think you'd be worrying about audience dynamics at conventions?
I can't say worry about it overly much.
Sure. So you dreamed
now,
of doing that.
But it's
the
just,
writing was just the you, pathway yeah, to the audience dynamics.
Yeah.
It's just something that you notice and we have a unique vantage point, you know, and we see it happen and I've been doing this for almost 12 years, I guess, and just in that time I can see you can see the rise of the profile of comics in, you know, in the perception of the general public. But our presence at our conventions, at Comic Con, or you know, has just fallen through the floor, you know. It's just hard not to notice, especially when you are that guy, you know, up, you know, facing the crowd, and they're just either sleeping or, you know, and it's like, all right, I know for, you didn't rush to this panel and then fall asleep. You've been here all day, you know.
A lot of people get so excited they just pass out, though. I get
that
way constantly.
Yeah.
So maybe that's...
90% of people at conventions have narcolepsy, right?
Yep, that's the most... Well, the narcolepsy convention, which I know you speak at a lot of those.
Yeah. Everybody's very awake of that.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. Well, if they're going to be awake for something, it's the narcolepsy convention.
Daniel, let's talk about the stuff you're working on. I'm actually going to turn it over to Pete because I know Pete wants to talk about 1 million things with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Pete wants to marry you. Let's just boil it down.
Well, a huge
that's so flattering.
So a huge fan of the Deadpool run.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's amazing.
Thank you very much.
Very, very sad to see it end, but very happy when I heard about your next project because. It's like you're still writing Deadpool. I mean, he's still on the team. So
just not Deadpool. Now
right,
part of
exactly.
part of a team, which is a new thing for me. I've never written a team book as an ongoing series. I've written teams in, you know, in appearing in books that I've written, solo books. So it's a new thing for me. So it's, and that's really been a lot of fun because, you know, it's a new challenge. I get to, you know, learn something new. It also gives me an excuse to go back and read a lot of comic books, you know, and look at team books that were done really, really well. You know, looking at Joss Whedon's Astonishing X-Men and not really trying to break it down like, why does this work, but you kind of recapture that fandom, I don't know, that feeling, you know? Like, why did this make me, you know, when Cyclops was like, oh, I was just bullshitting, my eyes work fine, yeah. You blast there. Like that was awesome, right? Like, you were just like, fuck, yeah, you're jumping up and down. And,
you were a darling man, let me just say. Yeah. Based on that, that was a real fan moment.
And so, but everything, even though, you know, the team would split up and they'd come together, and the, you know, and but everybody always got their moment. And that's something you have to keep in mind, you know, when you're writing a team book, because, you know, I've got all these separate members of this new Thunderbolts team, but there are certain people who are going to come to the book simply because they're Deadpool fans. So I got to make sure there's a Deadpool moment and a Venom moment and a Red Hulk or T-Bolt Ross moment, or Punisher moment.
Don't forget Punisher.
And then I've got Steve to lean on, so it's like, all right, Steve, what's a good Punisher moment?
You know, exactly.
You're pretty much the guy.
Can I do a follow-up?
Yeah, go ahead.
What sense of obligation do you have to know every single little thing about every one of those characters?
I don't want this to be misconstrued because I don't want, you know, like, to say that if I say that I don't pay too much attention to past continuity, you have to, in reading through, you know, every issue, you know, you have to understand that there's an issue that's come out every month, and sometimes a character's, you know, the arc of a character is driven more by market, or sometimes they make missteps, so you don't necessarily want to honor every single thing, because with every character, there's usually something that's everyone would just rather didn't ever happen ever.
Right.
You know? Yep.
What character?
But what I find and what works well for me is you know, you don't mess with success. There's a reason why so many of these characters who were created 30, 40, 60 years ago, why they've maintained their profile, you know, up until now. And it's because the basic formula was sound. And most of them were created when it was, you know, good guy, bad guy of the week. So, you know, a lot of other versions of these characters, you know, the Hornet Man or da-da-da-da, they all fell to the side. Spider-Man stuck around. There's a reason for that, so don't.
Well,
go fuck
there are a lot
that.
Of Hornet fans out there as well. And I hear they're rebooting Hornet Man for a movie, which I'm looking forward to.
You just kind of take those keystone moments throughout the character's arc and, you know, see where they are now, see where they started from. You see, you know, I'm all about wild hand gestures, and this is an audio podcast.
But, well, we can take a couple pictures of your hands and put them in there.
And use that as the compass. And you know, they've given, you know, you have a direction and go.
Okay. Now,
real quick. Well, it's not like...
Come on.
Honestly, yeah, I know. Well, real quick, though, honestly, the Punisher, though, it's not like everyone's like, well, you know, he's been shot in the shoulder. Where's his shoulder scars? You know, of the characters...
He was also an angel.
I know.
Pete, quiet for a second. What did you think of when he was a Frankenstein?
I actually did a crossover with Rick.
Yeah, it was great, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
The reason why I enjoyed it is that, I don't... the idea of a sacred cow is kind of abhorrent to me. So I don't think that you should not mess with something just because it's, you know, it's a sacred thing. Cool. So I thought
what if the
ballsy.
The villain is actually a sacred cow. That'd be pretty cool, right?
Great. Yeah.
Well, then you know you're going to kill it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the hook of your story.
Right. But where's one other thing? One other thing real quick. So would you say, like, you, Daniel Way, are saying that Frankencastle was a good thing?
I'm saying is it took a lot of balls to do it, and in doing that, I think that you can't make any when it comes to creativity, fear doesn't fuel creativity at all. It kills it dead. So I was proud of comics when someone said, I'm going to do this. I know he Rick knew he was going to catch holy hell for it.
Yeah.
But he did it anyway.
From Pete LePage.
And and all's well and good now,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, I think that's all the time we have. So, do we have any more questions?
Yeah, if we could just take it back a little bit. People talk about having fun writing comics.
People do talk about having
fun writing characters. A lot of your Deadpool, especially recently, has been like hilarious.
Sorry, can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah.
I just want to mention, for those of you listening at home, a dog just walked through.
This just
did. That was more interesting than anything we've done this entire show. No, all of you.
That cuts
I looked
really
out.
Deep.
Every single one of you were like.
Well, you put an animal on stage, everyone's going to look.
I'm just saying. Maybe
I see three animals on stage.
Did you really?
Well, Pete and I have been talking about replacing you with a schnauzer for quite some time.
I think that's a great idea for the
life
of the show.
What just happened?
Wait,
anyways.
You didn't replace Alex with a schnauzer? Oh. What's up, Alex?
Bark.
Anyways.
What our hosts don't realize is that Daniel and I slipped out for drinks during this last to-do, and none of them noticed.
We built that into the show.
I feel like drink rate. I get the distinct impression that this has been brewing for a while under
yes.
the surface. And
Pete's been very excited to meet you, sir, in specific. So that's all the time we have.
Anyway, I just wanted to talk a little bit about like leaving something that seemed like you were like running on all cylinders. I mean, some of those jokes were hysterical with Deadpool. Really hilarious moments that you've been building up over time. Are you sad at all to move on?
Can I open that up?
Yeah.
Actually, a bit. For both of you guys, what's it like leaving a title that you've been on for a really long time?
Well, I will say with Deadpool, for one thing, I was actually, the original plan was that I was going to leave after the Dead arc.
Wow.
And because of like scheduling stuff in Marvel, I was asked to stay on, but it was put to me, they're like, do you think you could stay with the book for years worth of stories? And there was no pressure. It wasn't like and I had to ask myself, well, do I have anything left to say? And I realized that there was a lot of themes that had run throughout the series that I thought would benefit from getting a little more space. And the only thing I asked, I got to work with a buddy of mine, Sean Crystal, on one of the arcs, and we ended up with a lot of really great stories. And to leave after that, I have absolutely no bad feelings. That was the best way to leave a book. I mean, they were like, "Is there anything else you'd like to do?" Because normally, I mean, you have to understand they're running a business, and if your time on a title is done, it's done. And I thought that was an extremely gracious exit. You know, that doesn't come along very often. Especially, and to get 65. Thank you, Jordan White,
nice.
My editor.
Jordan White. Nice.
65 issues uninterrupted. Don't feel bad at all. Feel great about it.
65 issues uninterrupted. That's pretty impressive.
It's not a mainstream comic.
Not 120, but...
There is a conversion factor.
Yeah.
Listen, I had a completely different... when I leave a series for a new series, it's like a messy breakup. I mean, it's like my book has told me that it's like, I used to like sleeping with you, but I want to see other writers now. when I break up with real women, of course, I don't want them to go on to anyone else, but I send them brochures from nunneries and things like that because I think Jesus is really the only one who can replace me.
Nunneries have the best brochures, I gotta say.
But
they really put them together really well.
When I hear that a new writer's coming on, I will actually send him brochures for other careers he could consider. that you could make more as
a
plumber.
Be a lifeguard.
I'm telling you, serve your community is all I'm saying. I don't want them to go on and have a happy life without me. Does that make me shallow? Maybe, but
Well, what about something? I was a huge fan of Jack of Fables, which ran 50 issues.
Yep.
I guess I don't know necessarily what went on behind the scenes, but you guys definitely wrapped up what was going on in that series. When you're able to wrap up something like that, does it feel a little more satisfying to you?
Well, sure. I mean, when you own the characters, you can do silly things with them, like kill every single one of them, except the little baby. We save the little baby.
Smart.
And the little blue pig.
And was it, I'm sorry to interrupt, was it always planned to go that length? I mean, was it, did you know the story?
It was planned to go for as
did you know, like, with, the end
right,
stop?
With Jack, we had a very disreputable character. So the plan was we will make him as evil as we possibly can and still have fun with him and then give him his comeuppance. We didn't know exactly what the comeuppance was going to be, but it was going to be, you know, fatal. So
I have one more question.
We didn't know we were going to kill everyone with him. That was my co-writer, Matt, said, can we do the Shakespearean ending? You know, the when Shakespeare reaches the end of the play, realizes that it's time to close, and he just has literally everyone die on stage.
And a marriage sometimes.
And sometimes a marriage.
If it's a comedy, right?
The tragedies.
Right.
I've always been curious. When, you know, Jack was a breakout character, what was it? Your decision, not anyone else's decision. Did you give him his own series so that Fables wouldn't become Jack of Fables? Did you have to give him room to go?
A little bit. If he was in Jack of Fables, anytime he's on stage, he owns the story.
Right.
And when we did our crossover, much to the howls of many of the readers, I think it was partially because of that. Because when Jack, he's like a living force of chaos. He comes in and everything goes wonky and starts revolving around him. And
to a
certain extent,
like that for a while.
Yeah.
To see, and he appears in this this week's issue of Ferrest.
Yes, he does.
Actually, which I just read that, and seeing him there, I was like, oh, what has he been doing? And not much. Dead. so it made me very, it actually, I was like, oh, I was sad.
Yeah. Well, luckily we cheated.
We
killed him a non-disclosed length of time in the future. But just judging by the things that happened, it had to be like, you know, 20 years from now, whatever. So we can cheat and bring him back if we want to.
Nice.
Cool. There you go.
Briefly.
All right, guys, we're going to move on with our next section, which we like to call the stack.
Yeah!
In the stack, we're going to talk about some comic books that came out this week and go to bat for them. First thing we're going to talk about, this is Pete's pick, Avengers vs. X-Men, number 12.
Yeah.
From Marvel Comics. Pass this over to you guys. So, Pete, what did you like about this book?
This was kind of the conclusion of the old...
definitely the conclusion.
Kind of. But this was very satisfying for me because I couldn't have planned it better. You know what I mean? Cyclops,
planned it?
No, yeah. But Cyclops was... I've always felt like it's been a huge douchebag to make him the villain... And hated is just so awesome. I love seeing him in handcuffs and sad.
He looks great in handcuffs.
Oh, yeah. I was like, eat it, Cyclops.
I mean, he's been in eye cuffs his whole life, so to put him in handcuffs is just a really exciting change.
Yeah, yeah. So, I really thought this was a powerful issue, really kind of emotional and fun, and really wrapped up well. Sometimes with big events, it's kind of like, okay, this is ending because we're moving chess pieces. And I felt like this really told a story. And was really well done.
I liked it a lot as well. So I think to spoil a little bit of it, the Phoenix Force reignites the mutant population at the end of this. Which I think is, so it's sort of saying that the Phoenix Force is now responsible for mutants. Is that, I guess that's
maybe
something you could say.
Yeah.
I don't look to anyone in the audience and I ask that. Right. But it's
definitely not anyone who works at Marvel.
No, wouldn't make eye contact with anyone there. So I think that's an interesting twist, and I don't know if that will have ramifications, but that's sort of surprising.
The thing that I think is most interesting about it is there was this whole thing, and not to, you know, hang on one phrase, but Joe Quesada came out and said, there's these genies we got to put back in the bottle. One of them was Spider-Man's marriage. The other one was mutants and limiting the mutant population, and that's been in Marvel Comics for a really, really long time. This is kind of Axel Alonso comes up Bard and he's like, let's get that genie out again.
Well, you don't want genies in bottles are no fun. Rub that bottle or lamp.
No, don't you like the story of Aladdin where he's like, nice lamp. Shelf.
Yeah. Really exciting. I love seeing a character just have a well-decorated apartment.
Yes. That's my favorite kind of story.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I like this too. Let's move on.
Slow down there, Schnauzer. Do you have nothing to say about it?
Yeah, I like that there was a definite winner and loser of the competition. I do like the place Cyclops is in. I hope he actually kind of becomes a villain. I think he really full-heartedly became Magneto by the end, and I thought that was kind of cool. I thought that was fun.
Yeah, well, I don't think he's a villain.
He's a villain.
No.
He killed a bunch of people.
The Phoenix Force was all up in him.
Oh, please, the Phoenix Force. That was an excuse.
If you
that
had, if you had ultimate power, you would fuck it up.
No way.
Yes, you would.
No,
I know you would.
No,
the power you have, you sort of blow off in different ways. And so if you had ultimate power, I think you'd blow it a little bit, and you'd be sitting there and eye cuffs and handcuffs being like, are there mutants? Fuck you, Captain America.
No way.
Because that's what he did. I think he's going to be fine.
If you guys had ultimate power, what's the first thing you would do?
Fuck it up.
Yeah. See?
I think that's pretty good. Yeah. All right, let's move on with Justin's pick, which was Superman Action Comics number 13 from DC Comics.
That guy likes that.
So,
that guy loves
Justin, what'd you like about this book?
What's that?
What'd you like about this book?
Great
what
question.
What did you think?
I thought you said, "Why? How'd you F this up?" And I was like, whoa.
Well, you've been planning it for so long.
True. Grant Morrison, we were criticizing him, I believe, last week on the show about how the stories he's been writing lately are so dense. We were talking about Happy, and it was like sort of I said, I wish he would just tell a story, and then this issue comes out, and I feel like, yes, he took The Fortress of Solitude, threw a Negative Zone thing in there, and told a really good Halloween story that had like a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it was great. It was heartfelt. All the characters were interesting. It was sort of spooky. Great story. For those of you that didn't read it, it's there's the ghosts that are in the Negative Zone. One of them sort of gets out. Negative Zone. Phantom Zone. Sorry.
No, it's a crossover.
Boo this man.
Right.
Hey, that was fun.
Well, this is Super Guy, right?
cool. Great. Really, really fun. The Phantom Zone, haunting the Fortress of Solitude. Crypto's in this. What's his name? Crypto? Is that it? And then it's very good.
So it's like Ghostbusters? Like with all the ghosts coming
just
out?
Just because something has ghosts in it doesn't mean it's like Ghostbusters.
But they're escaping from something.
There are several things that have ghosts in it.
Like
I'm just saying.
What?
Well, they did.
Well, there's Ghostbusters, Ghostbusters 2, and the spec script I wrote for Ghostbusters 3.
And to be fair, the ghosts do get busted here. So
yeah,
this is
point.
Ghostbusters.
And there was a Transformers reference in this, too, with the more than meets the eye.
That's not necessarily a Transformers reference.
Well, people say isn't
that,
it?
People say that about other stuff.
I don't think they mean anything else. But
there's a great Neil
before. I like this issue as well. It's a lot of Grant Morrison channeling his We Three stuff, I think, with Crypto, which is very nice. He actually writes animals really well, which is very surprising. But this is a good issue. Definitely pick it up. Last thing, my pick, Boys 71 from Dynamite Comics. This is the second to last issue ever of The Boys. And it has grown so much from its origins. I mean, I feel like I don't know how Garth Ennis pitched it, but it was like, it's like a dirty superhero book with these guys killing superheroes. But over the course of the past 71 issues, it clearly has been a stealth way for him to explore humanity and these characters. And this issue is basically a conversation between two people on the top of the Empire State Building while one of them dies. And it's some of the most nuanced character work that I've ever seen in comics. It's incredible. Now, I don't know if you guys regularly read The Boys. I'm curious to hear what you think about this issue.
I was really shocked by this because normally, like you said, I'm really like, okay, how many pages till we're pissing on each other and making dick jokes? And, you know, there's, you know, titties in the background.
You say that about every single book you read. And the newspaper.
Yeah, the newspaper's the worst.
Yeah.
Anyways, New York Times, when are you going to get it together?
I know, so much pissing in the New York Times.
But I was really shocked by this issue and how powerful the panels were. They still had a little bit of the Boys element in there, but really... I couldn't believe that it's all that happened. It was just these two guys on the roof the whole time. And I was there. I was kind of held and gripped.
There was a woman that watched the news and then yanked her hair out at one point.
Oh, okay. All right,
sure. There's that, too.
I don't read The Boys, so while I understood that there was nuance, I didn't know what the nuance was about. So that was sort of confusing for me, but I thought it was a good story nonetheless.
All right, and that's it for the stats.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, we're going to move on with my favorite section, and it's my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions. For that, we're going to go over to Barman Boothman.
Hey,
everybody. Yeah.
Friend
hey,
to all.
Barman.
I've got a ton of questions tonight.
Awesome.
So many. So the first one, you guys might get into later in another section, but it is relevant. So Aside from the big stuff like Stan Lee's talk, what are the must-see events at Comic-Con? Are there any under-the-radar panels I should check out?
Ooh.
Sure. Under-the-radar panels. Well, first of all, Bill, Daniel, what panels are you guys doing? What should people head to at New York Comic-Con?
I am doing a panel explaining how a writer in comics must write to the artist. So think visually, etc.
Cool.
I'm doing a Vertigo panel, which is sort of that, you know, show up if you want a table of contents of what we're publishing. and a Fables nice. Panel, which is show up if you want to learn stuff that you shouldn't know about. About, you know, nice. A very particular
about,
set
about
of books.
Fables or just stuff
about
in general?
Well, yes. You know, I'm going
there's a lot of stuff I should know.
I tried to do a, you know, me and my friends will solve all your problems panel, and they didn't believe I could do it.
That's really nice.
If some of you during your question time have, you know, problems, I will take care of them.
That is incredibly kind.
That's
of
exciting.
You.
No, I give and give.
Daniel, I like that. I think that's actually a brilliant idea to do a panel for writers on how to write to an artist.
It's a tough skill to learn if you don't have it from the get-go.
I started out, I self-published a book, and I'd only written two scripts before Axel Alonso called me to pitch ideas to Marvel. And I was writing scripts at that time to be pieces of entertainment in and of themselves. And so they were entertaining scripts to read, but an artist was reading it and saying, I'm not sure what to draw.
And what do you mean by that? They were entertaining in, like, the stage
directions? Well, I wrote it so that the script itself, it wasn't informative in what an artist needs to know.
Right.
And it also didn't, you know, you have to, like, put pins in a script, like, you know, this is important because this is going to loop into this, or this character knows this, especially if you want to get any nuance or kind of those little things that those little character moments that sometimes are only communicated best with the art that you're going to loop back to when all is revealed, you know, in your big, you know, third act revelation. Your artist needs to know that, and they need to know it ahead of time so that they can set it up, because otherwise you end up with like a really bad mystery novel, like the detective flips back the carpet and it's like, use the trap door. It's like, there wasn't even a carpet in this room in chapter one. This was a kitchen.
Underneath this linoleum.
And also little things, like you're in a house. All right, if you're going to have something later on happening on the second story, you might want to tell the artist the first time you see the house, it's a two-story house, at least. Little things like that. You know, you have to pay attention to that. It also forces you to think through, you know, think visually, like you said.
Yeah, Bill. What about for you? What are the big things you try to get across to an artist when you're writing a script?
I mean, the real thing.
No amulets.
No. Yeah. The real thing is you have to tell the story. I love beautiful art, but you know, grimacing close-ups on every page doesn't tell it. You really do have to tell the story.
It's a visual medium, and you have to take advantage of that.
Yeah. Now, you got to understand that in comics, this is actually an argument I've had with publishers for some time now, because occasionally they will list the writer as the author, and then there's the artist. And that's not true, because in a work of prose, the writer tells the entire story. Sure, he's the author of the story. Comics, the story isn't told until the writer and the artist collaborate to produce. And most of the storytelling is done by the artist. All the exposition, unless you're a terrible writer, is done by the artist. To write comics well, you have to not only think visually, but also know that you're in collaboration with someone who can make or break this story, and unless you're the one drawing it as well, you have no control over that, unless you've got the communication skills and the chops to do it. To write comics, you have to be two guys, a Jekyll and Hyde, and you have to be able to switch back and forth between them effortlessly. to write the dialogue and the captions and the things that are actually going to be read by the reader, you have to have the poet in you. You have to have the good guy that can tell a story with clarity, but with a certain amount of elan and a bit of a swagger.
Hmm.
But half your writing, at least, is for one person only, which is your artist.
Huh.
And for that, you have to be a technical writer, which is don't try for poetry, don't try for anything else. You need clarity. You need to tell him what you need, or maybe have a conversation with him back and forth on what you need. And those are two different skill sets, and you have to switch back and forth like that on demand, or you can't do this. It's a tough way to do it. It can't be done by everyone.
How many times have you're reading a comic and you don't know this until later when it's revealed, but you know, as a character is saying something, he has a certain look on his face, and you think it's because of this, but then you find out later it's because of this other thing. All right. When you got that and when it connected, that's because the writer and the artist got on the same page right there and said, and basically said in the script, look, I want it to look like he's thinking this, but what's actually happening is this. You know, don't try to be clever or think that, or he's not your audience. He's your collaborator. You know, he's not out there. He's right here.
And how many other art forms are there like that, where sort of it's two parts that are?
I think like directors and cinematographers.
Right, because I guess that's. But even that, like, there is a little bit of sort of ownership, more just like, well, I'll defer to you on that.
I do that all the time.
You defer to the
artist. Yeah. Look, I didn't go to art school. I can draw attention to myself. That's about how much I can draw. It's ridiculous for me to say, well, I think I know what this page should look like. Not you, Steve Dillon, with your, you know, 30 years of experience. You know, get out of their way. You know, do what you're there to do, and you know, collaborate. I can throw ideas at him, and when he throws story ideas or writing ideas at me, I listen. You know, I'm not going to turn away a bad idea just because I didn't come up with it. You know, geez, that'd be stupid.
And there's your under the radar panels in New York.
Enjoy those.
Do you guys have any you want
to? What I always tell people is. The best thing, the way I found out about panels is going to Artist Alley and finding out what people are doing and what they're excited about, and they'll give you all the best information.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to just get it right from the source. So whatever panel the artists and writers are excited about, those are the ones to go to.
Yeah. Is it all right if I plug one really quick?
Please do.
I knew this was coming.
No. I'm moderating a panel for Scott C. on Friday night at 7 o'clock. He does the Great Showdowns. You probably see it online.
Yeah.
And it should be a lot of fun. He's going to do this thing where we're going to chat about his work for a little bit. He's going to show off some stuff. And then anybody who asks a question, he's going to do a portrait of you while he's answering the question and then give you that portrait. So it should be kind of fun.
Wow. Cool.
That's cool.
So that's Friday at 7
Better
o'clock.
Better be long questions so we can get that portrait in.
How are you? Things like that. All right. Raise your hand if you asked that. You're going to get some free comics. Let's get the next question.
Will there ever be a good Deadpool movie made?
There'll be a really good Deadpool game made.
Yes! Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Daniel is writing a Deadpool game right now. You probably can't tell us a whole lot about it.
Not a whole lot. I mean, no, not a whole lot. I can say that it sounds like canned marketing, but I don't think there's ever been a game like this, because we're doing things that even
soon to come out from
Activision, okay. High Moon Studios, to where there people are kind of scrambling to be like can we do this? Well, I know we can do this, but can we do this? And it's been really cool, because right from the get-go, in my first meeting with them, I said, the only way I want to do this is if we do a game that could only be a Deadpool game. Because if it's just going to be a game where we need someone to put their finger on the trigger and shoot some, then that sounds dull. And if I didn't do that in the comics, I'm not going to do it in a video game. And because, you know, we haven't gotten a good movie yet, so I would at least like to have a good game. And the guys at High Moon were right from the get-go, were like, we feel the same way. And I knew from our very first story meeting that this was going to work out. And just like every good Deadpool story, if you pull Deadpool out of this game, it falls apart. It could only be a Deadpool game. And I think that Deadpool fans are going to lose their minds over it. And I think it's also going to... I think a lot of people are going to pay attention to this game. Like, your gamers are going to take notice of this.
All right, hopefully. If you have multiplayer, are other people going to play his other thought bubbles?
That's a very good idea.
Yeah. Thank you. Bill, and do you think there's any possibility, could there ever be a Fables game?
Yeah, if we ever decide to do a Fables computer game, we're going to do it a little differently than most. Well, it's already going to be in progress. It's going to come out from Telltale Games, and it's going to come out sometime in the next year.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Nice.
Cool.
Games are the new movies.
And we had a pretty good philosophy in this one, which is we wanted to do a Fables game that could only be a Deadpool game. and son of a bitch, but we pulled it off. So that's very good.
Just a suggestion. Wow. What about Angry Big Bees?
Angry Big Bees. Well, we are indeed.
I know what you're doing.
We're actually looking for a name for it because, of course, at the same time Fables, the comic came out, Fable, the computer game, came out. And so we can't really use Fables and not
that's
have
sort of
just,
be a sequel.
Just
that
a
game.
Bath of confusion. So we're kicking around ideas for the name. But, yeah, we are
doing
a Fables game.
I had this experience where I came up with this character called Hitmonkey, and then there was this other well-known character that was just known as Hitman. Yeah. He had a red tie. I gave the monkey a blue tie.
Nice. Yes. Smart.
All cleared up.
That's how Republicans and Democrats do it, too.
Yeah. I consider that selling out, but okay, sure. You know, blue tie.
Cool. Are you working on a game called Villains and Vigilantes as well? Is that?
Villains and Vigilantes, for people who are generally much older than what I can tell from the audience, was a paper game, the first superhero role-playing game. Way back when, D&D stuff, tabletop stuff.
Nice.
After a long
like these
battle,
guys don't have a copy of the Fiend Folio molding under their bed right now.
Yeah, on my bed.
Okay, I'm embarrassed.
I have no idea what you're talking
about.
No,
Villains and Vigilantes has come out again because after a long struggle, the creators got it back from the publisher who sat on it for too long. That's one of those things that I'll work on some V&V stuff when I can. In all of that really wonderful free time I have. So should be real soon.
All right. Cool. Raise your hand if you ask that one. You're going to get some free comics. Let's get the next question.
What is your favorite single-issue story of all time?
Oh, boy.
Oh, wow.
Jeez. Oh.
Stakes could not be higher for this one.
Does anybody have... right off the bat, answer?
That we've written?
Ferris number 8.
Yeah.
There we go.
That was a good... That's not a single
issue. Yeah, it actually was a good issue. I don't know. Favorite single issue of all time?
This is a little bit of a cheat, but like the Jonah Hex run were all amazing single issues.
That is a cheat because it's not a single issue.
Right, but I feel like... that's why one of the things I loved about the book, because I knew every time it was going to be an amazing single issue.
What was this is probably not my favorite of all time, but it was Jonah Hex number 50, where they showed the whole relationship with him and Tulu Black, where they had their baby and they lost their baby.
Yeah,
that was
Darryl Cook do the art on
that? Good issue.
Yeah, that was really sad.
Yeah,
Sandman number 50, I think the Ramadan story was a very good standalone issue that comes to mind.
Yeah, do you guys have an answer?
It's a Hellblazer issue. It might have been Garth Ennis' first issue. It's the one where he digs up his grandfather. You know what I'm talking about?
He digs up a lot of dudes.
He digs up his grandfather and then cusses up. He's like, why am I a bastard? You know, and at the end of the answer is his grandfather's got worms crawling out of his nose as a zombie. He's like, because I was a bastard. You're just like me. And then he bangs him in the head with a shovel and kills him and puts him back in the ground.
Wow.
Runner-up is actually drawn by the same guy, Steve Dillon. Remember that Nuff Said month way back?
Yeah.
Steve Dillon's Punisher issue. Loved it. Not a word in it. It was awesome.
That's awesome.
Bill, what about you? Do you have a favorite single issue?
Favorite's hard. I suppose if I was, given some advance warning,
It might be the two-part Alan Moore final Superman story before they revamped it for John
Byrne.
For
the man who had everything?
But as far as the one that affected me most was Death of Gwen Stacy, Spider-Man. I loved it. I was my heart was torn out. I put the book down, quit reading Spider-Man, quit reading comics for several years until I came back. And I think anything that engages you on that much of a level to where you said, okay, that's it. It was a tragic story. It's done. Now, I understand. I heard a rumor that they've actually done more Spider-Man comics since then.
You're thinking of Hornet Man.
I wouldn't know, though. Because in my mind, it was this story of, you know, hard luck guy finds, finally, after so many mistries, true love. She dies tragically, and he tries to go on, and that's it. But then it was done. It was, the story's over.
So you haven't read Spider-Man since then?
No, I've dabbled, but it took me many years.
Oh, wow, that's amazing,
really?
Too. Yeah. That definitely affected you.
It did. Yeah. It did. It was a great
story.
I'd like
to know how many other people, because, I mean, obviously there's no way they were like, that was the goal. Like, this is going to make people stop reading this book forever.
Yeah.
But we did it. Do you think, like, on some level that pays into why they don't want to go back to it very often?
For me, I stopped reading Spider-Man as soon as Uncle Ben died. I feel like it really jumped the shark after that. I was just not a fan.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah. Raise your hand if you ask that. You're going to get some free comics. Let's get another question.
Not much changed after that, actually.
What was your favorite fable growing up?
Bill, did you have a favorite fable, something that drove you to make the series and start the series?
Well, two parts to this answer. First, I am so glad that for some reason now Fable has come to refer to the embodiment of the characters, which is not, of course, what the word means. But
yeah.
Since we've decided that's what it actually means in Fables, you know, good for me.
I think they meant the video game Fable.
very good. Well played. as a kid, the thing that blew my mind most was that in one instance that I knew of, the Big Bad Wolf was in two different fairy tales. The thing with the pigs, where he failed, and the thing with the girl in the red hood, where he failed. But that doesn't matter. It was definitely a crossover. And before then, I knew that crossovers only happen in the comics. And it turns out, real stories have crossovers too. So it started to get that, I think, provoked more than anything else my interest in, there must be something to these stories. I want to read more. And they were really cool, and I'm certain that was the inciting incident. And so, he's got to be the favorite character by default.
That's really good.
Daniel, what about you?
Almost ashamed to admit this. All right, I have to preface this by letting you off just how incredibly stupid I can be, especially as a kid. Like, when I watched Mary Poppins, like on the Sunday afternoon movie, the way I remember it, like, the movie went off. I went to the closet. I got my mom's umbrella, climbed up the tree. I got on the roof. I opened the umbrella and I jumped.
Wow.
It made absolute sense to me. I watched Tarzan, took my dog's chain, went up in the tree again. Wrapped it around my arm real good, jumped out of the tree,
man.
Hung there until someone found me.
I think you just wanted to jump out of that tree.
I think it is. I think
I hope
what
your
it
parents
is.
Chopped down that tree soon.
So,
after.
Or
stop showing you movies.
So, I burnt my treehouse down.
Yeah.
I put a fireplace
and
in it.
And you saw a backdraft, and we're like, let me figure this out.
No, it was wintertime, and I was like, man, my treehouse is cold. So I was like, I need a fireplace.
Wow.
So
that's amazing.
So anyway, so I and this is after many incidents in kindergarten, but I'm in kindergarten. And do you guys remember film strips?
Oh yeah.
Where it's like story, bing, advance the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there were these really, to me, utterly terrifying. They looked like painted cells. So it was Hansel and Gretel. and we're watching this, and I'm hearing this story, and I'm hearing this great story about these kids who go wandering in the woods, and they find a house made out of candy. And I'm like, oh, wow. And I'm thinking this is the greatest story ever. And there's this nice lady, they're kids, and she's an adult, and then she's giving them candy, all they want, and then she puts them in cages. And it was like, this is like watching Saw to me. And I was like, what? And then she's going to cook them in an oven? And I was so horrified that I ran out of the school.
I ran.
They had to chase me down. Yeah. They kept telling me, they were like, no, the story ends okay. They push her in the oven, and I'm like, you're lying. And I don't know why that's my favorite. I don't know why that came. But yeah, Hansel and Gretel. Fucking
wow,
story
that's amazing.
Scares
man, you had a lot of visceral reactions to fiction back in the day.
Yeah. Wow.
I have no protection against fiction.
Fantasy.
It just gets right in.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know if we can top that. So why don't you raise your hand if you ask that. You're going to get some free comics. We have a couple more questions. All right, one more?
A lot more.
All right, okay. We're going to do a lightning round. First answer is correct, so let's do it.
Who has more voices in their head, Deadpool or Rob Liefeld?
Oh, same person, sort of.
Take it, Bill.
I think the answer is Deadpool. Rob has only one voice.
Rob's got a pretty loud voice.
Yeah, exactly. It's one booming voice of his own. Yeah.
Right. So I think by default it would be Deadpool.
All right, cool.
And I will say that you know, all that stuff, all that the crazy stuff that we associate with Deadpool now, that wasn't there when Rob Liefeld was working on the character. You know,
he
actually didn't
gun.
Hardly talk at all.
Yeah.
So
next question.
But to soften that, the visual aspect of Deadpool has not changed. And it is iconic, so got to give it up for that.
I can't believe you just said all that horrible shit about Rob Liefeld. Let's get the next question.
Any chance of a reboot / revisit to the Elementals? And then the person wrote in parentheses, please don't kill me.
None. The rights to the Elementals is currently owned by a madman / crook / idiot. And in this business, you can be any two of those three and still make a go at it. Most of us, you know, fall into any two of them. You got the trifecta working for you. It's not going to happen. It will never come back. I'm sorry to hear that, but it's just not going to happen.
All right. Next question.
Wow. If Deadpool were to cross over into another video game, which game should he be in and/or/ not be in?
Oh, nice.
I think that anything that Deadpool enters into just becomes Deadpool, you know. He's a total attention whore, you know. I think that the spirit of the question is like what would be the most explosive mix? Gosh, I don't know. Like
Pitfall, Tetris.
Tetris.
Oh, well, Tetris, you could just shoot and shoot and shoot and shoot. I like that.
Would he shoot the shapes, or would he just be like, this is stupid?
Or no, angrier birds. I like that. Yeah.
Shoots him out of the air.
It's a fantastic question, and I have nothing but shit answers for it. So.
Duck Hunt, Pitfall.
Cool, let's get the next question.
Why wasn't I reading Mark Waid's Daredevil sooner?
I don't know.
You're stupid.
Yeah.
Jeez, idiot.
I've been saying that for years. You should read it.
Years? About one years. Year. About a year and a half.
It's a great title. If you guys aren't reading it, every issue is
fantastic. Can I chime in on that one? All right, so I loved all the Frank Miller dark stuff. All that. Love it. Loved what Bendis did. Loved what Brubaker did. And then Marvel made no... they were very clear that they were going to not do that. So I think, like a lot of people, I was prepared to not like it. It's great.
Yeah.
So it's like they didn't take anything away from me. They just gave me something else that I liked. So and also it's just another perspective on the character. And if you happen to like both, it just kind of cements the fact it's a really good character.
It's like walking into a house made of candy.
Damn right.
Only good things going to happen. Let's get the next question.
Let's say kidnapped. Oh, that makes sense. Hydra Bob and Snow White. How would Deadpool and Bigby handle it?
Wow.
Together. As friends and possibly lovers. I'm adding
like,
to this question.
In Act 1, just Bigby just eats Deadpool. But Act 3, he shits him out. And then he does something great.
Resolution. Resolution.
For those of you listening at home,
he like
Bill
crawls
is,
out of the wolf's butt.
Bill is nodding avidly, agreeing with
and he's called Dead Poop from that time on. A new hero is born. Boom.
That's a fact.
I cannot believe we gave that away for free.
One more question. All right.
Last one. Fuck, marry, kill.
Oh, great.
Oh, here we go.
X-23. Uh-huh. Elektra, Typhoid Mary.
Well,
X-23 is a
deeply
teenager.
Underage.
Yeah. So fuck.
Yep. Yeah. What? Good.
You gotta kill Typhoid Mary, right? I mean,
Elektra has died a couple of times, so she'd probably be okay if you killed her.
So what's the deal with this game? You choose one for all, or you do all of them to each of them?
What?
I don't know.
How does this game work? How does this game work? The order that you choose. It's just the order. I see.
Yeah.
Oof, Mary last.
Mary last?
Mary last.
So you'd fuck them and then kill them and then marry them.
And then marry them.
And that's so it for your audience easier. Questions. Thank you, Barman. All Barman. Right. We are now going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right.
Pete LePage.
Guys, this is a part we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you so much for showing up. We really appreciate it. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Because you were gonna buy comics anyway. Who would like an opportunity to win $25 free? Simply raise your hand.
Simply.
Yes, you, sir. Come on up. What is your name,
simply
sir?
Raise your hand.
It is Josh.
Josh, audience. Audience, Josh.
Hi, audience.
All right. Today's trivia is on the new Thunderbolts, which we are all extremely geeked about. You should have played.
Geeked.
But you didn't. All right, here we go. How this is going to work, Josh, is I'm going to read you a question. Listen to all three possible answers. Go 3 for 3. You'll get a gift card, okay?
Awesome.
Thank you, Boothman. Here we go. Question number one. Who is not on the new proudly red member of the Thunderbolts? Is it A, the Punisher, B, Venom, or C, Orko? Who is not a member of Thunderbolts?
I'm going to go have to go with C.
C, Orko's correct.
Oh, man. Think about it, though.
C, yep.
Explore the character.
Okay.
What's under the hat?
Exactly. In an interview with Newsarama, Mr. Way here did say, blank does kill a whole lot of people. Is it A, the Punisher, B, Deadpool, or is it C, Dean Cain? So it's either A, the Punisher, which would make sense, or it's B, Deadpool.
It's a 50-50 shot, so we're going to have to go with Deadpool.
Yeah!
It just kills everything.
That is correct. Last question.
Am I in a Twilight Zone that I'm the only one that saw the blatant cheating that was going on?
Yeah, well, that happens.
Wow.
Yeah.
In all the years of this show, no one's ever busted anybody.
Who is leading this team of badasses? Is it A, Elektra, B, Red Hulk, or C, Red Fox?
Well, since go Red with, Fox is dead,
right,
I'm
right,
going to have go. To go with Red Hulk.
Red Hulk is correct.
Nice.
$25 free.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, Josh.
Unbelievable. An unbelievable win out of nowhere. Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
I am looking forward to the next issue of Deadpool.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
man. 62 of 63. So the penultimate.
The comic
this has
might
been a
go
really
on.
Long miniseries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how to respond to that, actually. Yeah.
Can't wait to see how it's going to wrap up. So I'm excited.
Nice. I'm looking forward to Wolverine and the X-Men. Great book. It's been, even through the crossover, I feel like they've maintained a real strong voice.
Yeah,
and I'm excited to see it continue.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to Bloodshot number 4 from Valiant is coming out. I don't know if you guys have been reading that. We've talked about it on the show a couple of times. Awesome action stuff from Dane Straczynski. It's about this guy that has multiple memories of multiple different families in his head. He's trying to work them out. In the meantime,
very nice.
He's constantly getting killed over and over and over again. It's great. Definitely pick it up. Daniel, what are you looking forward to?
Looking through the list, I saw... All right, so I'm a big Garth Ennis fan.
Right.
And in the early 90s, early to mid-90s, there was a book from Fleetway... I'm pretty sure it was Fleetway. It came out called For a Few Troubles More. All right. That book ended up becoming Dix. Those characters are the guys in Dix. And I saw that they're putting out, they're actually going to color it now. And I'm assuming it's John McCrae. But if you have a chance to track it down, the book For a Few Troubles More, it's also McCrae, but he painted it. It's gorgeous.
Oh, wow.
It's funny as hell. So you get to meet those guys before they're Dix. So. and am I the only one who remembers when Dix was a Caliber series? When it was a black and white series?
Wow. Oh,
well, I am. I right. remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and plug your stuff. What should people check out?
Oh, yeah. Order Thunderbolts. Order lots of them. And we have 2 issues coming out, right? All right, and I can tell you that we definitely did a non-traditional opening issue. I think it's an extremely strong opening issue, but... A lot of times the second issue is dealing with what happened in the first issue. The second issue throws like all this other stuff onto the table, and actually keeps going in the third issue. There's just a lot going on.
So it's
one
long
book.
Number one issue.
Yeah, it's an extremely long number one issue.
Does it keep rebooting every issue?
Yeah.
No,
smart.
No, but smart. Because of the way it's structured, both the reader and the members of the Thunderbolts do not have all of the information. Everything is not apparent yet.
Ooh.
And by the time it is, everyone's so deep into it that it's just too late.
That's awesome.
Cool. Bill, what are you looking forward to?
All right. With a proviso that I never know exactly what comics are coming out on what day, so I'm going to try and hit this with some accuracy. But a 6-issue series written by Chris Robertson, published by IDW, called Memento, has come and gone, and it did pretty well. It had a nice audience. It's a wonderful story, and they're doing new issues and coming out digitally first, and I think that's either coming out or about to. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
That's cool.
Memento, wonderful, wonderful story.
Yeah, and I think that's how...
Memorial, what did I say?
Memorial.
Oh, well... Don't listen to me.
Pick up Memento on DVD.
Yep.
Memorial.
Check out the negatives.
Right. Memorial is great. Definitely.
So is Memento still available as a title? Is anyone doing anything with that? All right. Yeah. Okay. I
don't remember.
Write that down.
Cool. And plug some of your stuff. What should people check out?
For those of you that read Fables and Ferris and things, thank you. For those that don't, please try it. And FablesCon. It's actually Fabletown and Beyond, but if you go to your computer... or your smartphone, which is basically a mother box. they're not Star Trek flip phones anymore. We bypass them all along. I mean, you have these things. They ping at you. They have all your information and all your contacts and everything. It's Jack Kirby invented it. If we gave Arthur C. Clarke the credit for inventing satellites just because he described them in a story, all of our smartphones, Jack Kirby made them. So.
Nice.
But if you go to your mother box and look up FablesCon.com, FablesCon, all one word, .com, you can find out all about this convention we're going to have, and you're all entirely too welcome. Thank you.
Awesome. All right, a couple of things before we go. Next week on the show, we're going to have guest Zane Grant is going to be back here on the show talking about his new title, IDW's Let's Play God. We're also going to have comedian Sean Wickens. A couple of other things to plug. Pete?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to hear about all the amazing guests we have on the show.
Oh, about New York Comic Con, we're all going to be there sort of together and separately at different points.
Yeah, together and separately and things like that. I guess what you should do, follow Comic Book Live on Twitter. I just stole your thing. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
But we'll put all the information on where we're going to be and how to find us then. Yeah. But
Pete and I are doing interviews for Newsarama. So
right.
You can,
swing by the skybox and yell, "I hate Justin." That's my favorite thing. Yeah.
That's sort of our catchphrase. And then we're going to be drinking on Thursday night at a bar called Scallywags with the guys from The Moon Show. There's going to be some comedians performing as well.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
What time is that?
That's at 8 o'clock as a sort of a kickoff party for the con.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll be on Twitter with that, too. Yeah.
Also, you can check us out, comicbookclublive.com and nerds.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank. Before we go, we want to thank Daniel for being on the show.
Yeah!
Bill!
Yeah!
Barman! But most of all, we want to thank you guys. We are every Tuesday night at Potatoes in New York. Totally free. Please tell your friends. Good night!
Good night, everybody!